important parts. First, your suprachiasmatic nucleus. This pinhead-sized group of about 10,000 neurons acts as your internal clock and merrily tick-tocks away every moment of your life. Second is your pineal gland. This pine cone-shaped structure, thus the term pineal, is only about the size of a grain of rice, but nevertheless has long fascinated philosophers, neuroscientists, and hippies. The famous 17th century French philosopher, René Descartes, spent much of his life investigating the pineal gland, and eventually declared that it was the principal seat of the soul. More recently, New Agers have claimed that the area acts as a magical inner eye, and is part of a holistic chakra system that promotes mystical awakening and ancient enlightenment, or something like that. But Descartes and the New Agers are wrong. In fact, the pineal gland is responsible for something far more important. At certain times of the day, the suprachiasmatic nucleus causes the pineal gland to produce a sleep-inducing hormone called melatonin, making you feel drowsy and tired. Your internal clock sends these signals as part of a highly predictable pattern that repeats itself every 24 hours. Note: in reality, the situation is slightly more complicated. In addition to the effect of the internal clock, your level of alertness is also determined by a second mechanism known as the homeostatic sleep drive. In the same way that you feel hungry when you haven't eaten for a bit, and satisfied once you've had a meal, so this drive builds up the longer you stay awake and quickly dissipates when you sleep. This drive interacts with your internal clock. Sleep scientists refer to this pattern as a circadian rhythm, a term derived from the Latin word circa, meaning around, and dies, meaning a day. Let's take a quick look at this pattern in more detail. As with any cycle, you can begin to examine the effects of your internal clock at any point in the day. Let's start at 6 a.m. At this godforsaken hour, most people feel pretty sleepy. However, for the next 5 hours, your internal clock will make you feel steadily more alert, explaining why most people wake up between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. and feel pretty good during the first few hours of the day. Starting at around 11 a.m., you will slowly become less and less alert, leading to an all-time daytime low at about 3 p.m. If you're able to nap, this is the perfect time to nod off. However, do make the most of your nap time, because this dip will only last for about an hour or so. And from about 4 p.m. onwards, you start to become ever more energetic and perky, peaking at about 8 p.m. Then, from about 9 p.m. onwards, you experience a slow decline in energy levels, which encourages you to fall asleep just before midnight. Finally, these low levels continue throughout the night, and at 6 a.m. the following morning, the entire process starts to repeat. And so the pattern continues throughout every day of your life. Like the gentle ebb and flow of the tide, your level of alertness gently rises and falls throughout the day. Years of research have provided several important insights into this process. There has been, for instance, work examining sleep and babies. We are not born with circadian rhythms 1.0 pre-installed. Instead, newborns take lots of randomly timed naps throughout the night and day, resulting in them sleeping for about 16 hours a day and the rest of the time making as much noise as possible. As you might imagine, this is a joy to be around. However, the good news is that their circadian rhythms develop quite quickly, and within about 6 months, they sleep more during the night time. Circadian rhythms undergo a major shift during our teenage years. Contrary to popular belief, teenagers that appear to be superglued to their beds are not simply being lazy. During adolescence, circadian rhythms often shift by about 3 hours, resulting in teenagers not feeling sleepy until very late at night, and not being able to prise themselves out of bed until late morning. However, perhaps the most frequently researched aspect of the topic has examined the variation between the timing of people's circadian rhythms. Sleep scientists refer to this as your chronotype, with everyone falling on a continuum between those that naturally want to head to bed late at night and get up in the middle of the day, extreme owls, and those that fall asleep early in the evening and spring out of bed at the crack of dawn, extreme larks. Over the years, researchers have developed various ways of measuring people's owl-lark tendencies, including monitoring their body temperature and levels of the naturally produced hormone melatonin in their blood. One of the most widely used ways of classifying people involves asking them to complete a questionnaire about their preferred bedtime, how they feel in the morning, and whether their heads rotate through 360 degrees. I asked you to complete one of these questionnaires just before the start of this lesson. Think about your answers now. To score the questionnaire, add up the numbers associated with each of your answers, and then use the following scale to discover where you fall on the lark-owl continuum. 4 to 6, strong lark. 7 to 10, moderate lark. 11 to 13, neither owl nor lark. 14 to 17, moderate owl. 18 to 20, strong owl. Your chronotype is primarily determined by your genes, and so tends to run in families. It also has a large impact on the way that you think and behave. Perhaps not surprisingly, when it comes to sleep, extreme larks like to be in bed by 10 p.m., wake up around 6 a.m., rarely need an alarm clock, and don't tend to nap during the day. In contrast, extreme owls like to go to sleep around 1 a.m., rise about 9 a.m., often set several alarms, and enjoy daytime napping. In terms of when you do your best work and feel good, larks are most alert around noon and feel happiest between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m., whereas owls are most productive around 6 p.m. and feel their best between 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. There is a great deal of debate around the relationship between people's chronotype and their personality. But in general, larks tend to be introverted, logical, and reliable, whereas owls are more extroverted, emotionally stable, hedonistic and creative. On the downside, owls are also more likely to be untrustworthy, psychopaths, and narcissistic. Perhaps not surprisingly, these differences have a dramatic effect on people's personal lives, with, for example, research showing that on average, owls have 4 times as many partners as larks during their lifetime. People's chronotype also affects their relationship with food, with larks showing a strong tendency for eating breakfast within 30 minutes of waking, and owls being much more partial to a midnight feast. Unfortunately, lots of large evening meals tend to take their toll over time, causing more owls than larks to suffer from obesity. There is also a strong relationship between chronotype and academic performance, with larks getting higher grades than owls. Researchers originally thought that this was due to larks being more intelligent than owls. In fact, the early start times adopted by most schools means that owls are often studying and being examined when they are not feeling at their best. Because of this, several education experts think that there is a strong case for measuring pupils' chronotype and then using this information to help maximize their performance by, for example, scheduling lessons and exams at more appropriate times of the day. School children and students are not the only ones to suffer because of their chronotype. Chronobiologist Till Rönneberg from the Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich has argued that adults' internal clocks are also frequently out of step with their surroundings. During the week, many office workers are expected to be at their desks by 9 a.m. This is fine for larks, but tricky for owls. Struggling to go to bed earlier in the night, those with owl-like tendencies often only get a few hours' sleep before having to get up for work. As a result, they spend much of the week feeling overly tired, and so have to try to catch up on their lost sleep during weekends. For larks, it's the weekends that cause the problem. Many people's social lives involve staying up late on Friday and Saturday nights. Even if larks do manage to keep their eyes open at this time, they often struggle to lie in the following day, and so end up getting very little sleep. Rönneberg has argued that both phenomena result in a kind of social jet lag that is leaving large numbers of people constantly feeling tired. However, perhaps the most important work into our internal clocks has examined how they can be used to help treat those struggling to sleep. Rhythm and blues. Like many timepieces, your internal clock is not entirely accurate. In fact, Siffre's study showed that your internal clock is probably slightly on the slow side, taking just over 24 hours to complete a single cycle. Left unchecked, this small difference would cause you to slowly drift out of sync with the actual time, and after just a few weeks you would feel sleepy at the start of the day and wide awake when darkness fell. To help prevent this happening, your internal clock is reset each day by several factors, such as when you eat, move around, and most important of all, the amount of light entering your eyes. The light swirling around you right now has a dramatic effect on your brain. This light is entering your eyes and causing your retinas to produce tiny electrical signals that are then stimulating your suprachiasmatic nuclei and pineal gland. When these brain structures receive this stimulation, they stop producing the sleep-inducing hormone, melatonin, and so you feel alert and awake. However, if you were to turn out all the lights, your retinas would cease to stimulate these bits of your brain, and the subsequent release of melatonin would make you feel drowsy and tired. For this reason, neuroscientists often refer to melatonin as the Dracula hormone, because it only emerges in the dark. Unfortunately, some people's clocks fail to respond to these light cues, causing them to suffer from what is referred to as a circadian timing disorder. Over time, those suffering from the disorder slowly drift out of sync with actual time, eventually either going to bed very late at night, delayed sleep phase disorder, or extremely early in the evening, advanced sleep phase disorder. Unlike most people with insomnia, sufferers tend to enjoy several hours of uninterrupted sleep. However, on the downside, they find themselves getting up very late in the morning or towards the middle of the night, which can become problematic if their jobs or social lives require them to keep normal hours. Treatments often involve people sitting in front of commercially available light boxes that expose them to massive amounts of illumination in an attempt to reset their internal clocks, with those suffering from delayed sleep phase disorder seeing the light between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m., and those experiencing advanced sleep phase disorder doing the same thing between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. Research into circadian rhythms has also discovered what to do when our internal clock fails to tell the right time. If you jet around the world, you cross one or more time zones, and your internal clock is unable to keep up with the change. As a result, you soon start to experience an annoying phenomenon known as circadian dysrhythmia, or as most people refer to it, jet lag. Let's imagine, for example, that you're going to take a 6-hour flight from London to New York, and that you will leave London at noon. When you arrive in New York, your internal clock will think that it is 6 p.m., and so you might feel a tad tired and ready for an evening meal. Unfortunately, the actual time in America will be 1 p.m., and everyone there will be all alert and tucking into their lunch. As a result, you will be suffering from an east to west lag that sleep researchers refer to as phase delay. Now, let's imagine that you had instead flown from New York to London, leaving New York at noon. In this scenario, you would arrive in London, thinking it is 6 p.m., and ready to head out on the town for a bite to eat. Unfortunately, the actual time in London will be 11 p.m. at night, and so most people there will be heading to their beds. As a result, you will suffer from a west to east lag, called phase advance. Over time, the light levels at your new destination will slowly reset your internal clock to the correct time. However, before then, life can be tricky, with people feeling overly tired, thick-headed, and ill. Phase delay is far less disruptive than phase advance, and so flying east to west usually creates far fewer problems than flying west to east. But even relatively small differences can have a surprisingly large effect on the brain and body. Note: the human circadian rhythm is not exactly 24 hours, but rather about 15 minutes longer. As a result, your brain and body is very used to a very mild form of phase delay, in which you lose about a quarter of an hour each day. Some researchers believe that this daily experience explains why travelers find phase delay less disruptive than phase advance. In one set of intriguing studies, Lawrence Recht from the University of Massachusetts and his colleagues examined the performance of North American Major League Baseball teams. When a team had to fly east to west before a game, they won 44% of the time. In contrast, when they had to travel west to east, they were victorious just 37% of the time. Jet lag is unlikely to be a problem if the time difference between your point of departure and destination is less than 3 hours. Similarly, if you are only going to be away for a couple of days or less, it might be easiest to stay on your home time. For all other long-haul trips, the difference between your internal clock and the actual time may well cause you to feel disoriented, lightheaded, and listless. Adjusting to a new local time takes about half a day per time zone, if you are flying east to west, and two-thirds of a day per time zone, if you're flying west to east. However, worry not, because help is at hand, with researchers developing several methods for beating jet lag. Top tips to help overcome jet lag. Make good use of the days before you fly by starting to shift your body clock to the time at your destination. If you're flying to the east, get up slightly earlier. If you're flying to the west, get up slightly later. If possible, book flights that will minimize jet lag by following the simple adage, fly east, fly early, fly west, fly late. If you need to sleep during the trip, try to avoid sitting on the sunny side of the plane. For flights in the Northern Hemisphere, the sun will tend to be on the left side of the plane when you fly west, and on the right side when you go east. Several websites offer more precise guidance for specific flights. As soon as you board the plane, adjust your watch to show the time at your destination, and try to fit into this new time schedule as soon as possible. If it is time to sleep, get your head down. If it is dinner time, eat something. Some people believe that melatonin supplements can help control your sleeping patterns, and thus help you to adjust to new time zones. Research suggests that daily doses of melatonin can help alleviate jet lag, and that short-term usage seems to have few negative side effects. Consult your doctor before taking any medication. When you arrive at your destination, adjust your circadian rhythm by using the following simple rules of thumb. If you have traveled east, avoid the morning sun and seek out natural light in the afternoon. If you have traveled west, seek out light throughout the entire day. If you really cannot keep your eyes open during the day, take a quick nap, but set your alarm to make sure that it is no longer than 2 hours. In this lesson, we have explored two concepts that play a fundamental role in sleep. First, we discovered what happens to you every night of your life and unlocked the mysteries of light sleep, deep sleep, and REM. In the second part of the lesson, we turned our attention to circadian rhythms, examining how they determine where you sit on the lark-owl continuum, cause teenagers to struggle to climb out of bed in the morning, and can be used to overcome jet lag. Having dealt with these two fundamental concepts, in the next lesson we will turn our attention to what happens if you don't spend enough time in bed. Assignment: assess your sleep. This questionnaire will take just a few moments and involves rating the degree to which each of the following statements applies to you. Please don't spend too long thinking about each question. 1. Do you feel in control of your sleep? For example, can you fall asleep or stay awake whenever you want? Definitely no, 1. No, 2. Uncertain, 3. Yes, 4. Definitely yes, 5. 2. During the day, do you often feel sleepy when you are, for example, driving, sitting in a meeting, or chatting? Definitely no, 5. No, 4. Uncertain, 3. Yes, 2. Definitely yes, 1. 3. Do you tend to wake up during the night? Definitely no, 5. No, 4. Uncertain, 3. Yes, 2. Definitely yes, 1. 4. When you do wake up in the middle of the night, do you tend to struggle to get back to sleep? Definitely no, 5. No, 4. Uncertain, 3. Yes, 2. Definitely yes, 1. 5. Do you tend to have pleasant dreams? Definitely no, 1. No, 2. Uncertain, 3. Yes, 4. Definitely yes, 5. 6. How would you rate the quality of your sleep? Very poor, 1. Poor, 2. Uncertain, 3. Good, 4. Very good, 5. 7. How do you feel when you wake up in the morning? Very groggy, 1. Groggy, 2. Uncertain, 3. Refreshed, 4. Very refreshed, 5. Many thanks. More about this later. Lesson 2. How to be happy, healthy, wealthy, and wise. Where we discover the remarkable power of sleep, uncover an international zombie epidemic, and find out why you need to head to your bed right now. We're about to explore a remarkably simple idea that can help you feel happier, become more productive, lose weight, stop smoking, sharpen your thinking skills, be more creative, and boost your health. At times, it is going to be a deeply strange journey. And along the way, we will spend some time with the eccentric genius who lit up the world, find out what happens if you stay awake for several days, and discover how you may have just fallen asleep without realizing it. We begin by setting off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of Menlo Park. Lightheaded. In the previous lesson, we discovered how light entering your eyes causes your brain to suppress the release of the sleep-inducing hormone called melatonin. As a result, you feel more energetic and lively. In contrast, darkness encourages your brain to unleash the hormone, which in turn makes you want to head for your bed. For millions of years, the sun provided the only serious source of light on Earth. For hundreds of thousands of years, sunlight entered your ancestors' eyes during the day and made them feel lively, while at night, the darkness encouraged them to lie down and take it easy. This routine possibly evolved because hunting and gathering was especially efficient in the sunlight, and lying motionless in the dark was a good way of avoiding most potential predators. Every 24 hours, the Earth moved around the sun, and as sure as night follows day, your ancestors ran around in the light and fell asleep in the darkness. Then, about 150 years ago, everything suddenly changed. Thomas Alva Edison was one of America's greatest inventors and businessmen. Born in 1847, he showed an early fascination for mechanics, chemistry, and hard work. Hence his famous quote, "Genius is 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration." Although he received very little in the way of a formal education, Edison developed a flair for innovation at a very young age. When he was just 12 years old, he set up a printing press in the baggage car of a train and started to publish the first and perhaps only newspaper to be produced on a train. Over the coming years, Edison worked his way up the corporate ladder and in 1876 opened his own laboratory in Menlo Park, New Jersey. Dubbed the Wizard of Menlo Park by the popular press and Mr. Thomas Alva Edison by the less popular press, Edison created a series of remarkable products that would define the modern world, including early versions of the microphone, telephone receiver, record player, movie camera, storage battery, and earmuffs. Note, I made up the last one. In fact, earmuffs were invented in 1873 by Chester Greenwood from Farmington, Maine. Chester created his first pair of earmuffs when he was just 15 years old, and later made his fortune selling Greenwood's Champion ear protectors. Farmington, Maine is now known as the earmuff capital of the world, and each December the town stages a parade in which local police cruisers are decorated to look like giant earmuffs. Edison was convinced that many Americans failed to fulfill their true potential because they spent far too much time sleeping. The great inventor frequently boasted that he only needed 5 hours of sleep a day, and once declared, "We are always hearing people talk about loss of sleep as a calamity. They better call it loss of time, vitality, and opportunities." Driven by his love of activity, Edison decided to wage a war on sleep. During the early part of the 19th century, buildings and streets were lit by open fires, wax candles, oil lanterns, or gas lamps. These early forms of illumination yielded relatively small amounts of light, and so most people were forced to endure long periods of darkness after nightfall. Towards the latter part of the century, several scientists discovered that it was possible to create a much more powerful source of light by running an electric current through a metal filament. Unfortunately, the filaments that they used burnt out very quickly, and so proved completely impractical. Edison set out to develop a new form of filament that was cheap, effective, and reliable. The Wizard of Menlo Park systematically experimented with a diverse range of materials, later recalling, "Before I got through, I tested no fewer than 6,000 vegetable growths and ransacked the world for the most suitable filament material." After much trial and error, Edison placed a piece of carbonized bamboo in a glass vacuum bulb, ran an electric current through it, and created a light that burnt brightly for more than 1,000 hours. Like moths to a flame, entrepreneurs across the land realized the potential worth of Edison's invention and set about creating the complex infrastructure needed to bring the electric light bulb into homes and factories throughout America. In 1913, the first bulb to contain a coiled tungsten filament rolled out off the assembly lines and provided the type of economical, long-lasting, and bright illumination that we now take for granted. Just 20 years later, the vast majority of people in American and European cities had electricity coursing through their streets and homes. Midnight was no longer the darkest hour. Edison's brilliant invention had illuminated the world. The light bulb had a huge impact on the fabric of society. At the simple flick of a switch, people across the globe were now able to see in the dark, and so stay up long into the night. Millions of people made the most of these extra waking hours by socializing in their homes, or heading out to cinemas, theaters, restaurants, and bars. Artificial light also allowed manufacturers to open their factories around the clock, giving rise to shift work and the 24-hour workforce. Night had become the new day. The runaway success of the light bulb resulted in people being exposed to huge amounts of both natural sunlight and artificial light, resulting in the world remaining wide awake for ever-increasing amounts of time. In the last few years, the situation has become far more extreme. 24-hour media has combined with increased workloads, social networking, smartphones, and the internet to transform us all into creatures of the night. The statistics are staggering. In the year 2000, a large-scale survey examined the sleeping habits of more than 1 million people from 250 countries. Almost 50% of respondents said that they required 8 hours of sleep each night to feel well rested. Remarkably, only 15% said that they actually managed this much sleep. In 1960, a survey of over 1 million Americans found that the majority of people were getting between 8 and 9 hours sleep a night. Around the year 2000, several surveys carried out by the National Sleep Foundation and others revealed that this figure had fallen to about 7 hours. In 2006, the Institute of Medicine estimated that around 60 million Americans had a chronic sleep disorder. And recent surveys show that a third of Americans now get less than 7 hours sleep each night. The situation is no better in the UK, with a 2011 British survey revealing that more than 30% of respondents suffered from insomnia or another serious sleep problem. We are now all living in a world that never sleeps. Because of this, scientists across the world started to examine what happens to people's brains and bodies when they become sleep-deprived. Their results are enough to keep you up at night. Shattered. One way of examining the role that sleep plays in your life would involve preventing you from ever sleeping, and then seeing what happens to your brain and body. This type of study has been conducted with animals, and the results have been both dramatic and deadly. In the 1980s, Alan Rechtschaffen from the University of Chicago conducted perhaps the best-known and most disturbing study into the topic. Rechtschaffen and his colleagues wired up a group of rats to a machine that measured their brain activity, and then placed each of the animals on a stationary disc above a bowl of water. Every time the rat's brain activity indicated that the animal had fallen asleep, the disc would slowly rotate. This, in turn, forced the rat to wake up and move around in order to avoid falling in the water. Despite having access to more than enough food, within a week these sleep-deprived rats started to lose weight, and their fur developed an unhealthy yellowish tinge. After a month, all of them had died, thus proving that sleep is essential for life. Conducting a similar study with humans would be deemed highly unethical, and even if it were allowed, finding volunteers would probably prove a tad tricky, especially if they'd heard about the results of Rechtschaffen's rat experiment. However, a handful of hardy souls have willingly endured slightly more modest amounts of sleep deprivation, and in doing so revealed the vital role that sleep plays in your life. One of the first was a rather curious American disc jockey named Peter Tripp. Throughout the 1950s, Tripp wowed radio listeners across America. Initially working out of Kansas City and billing himself as the bald kid in the third row, a comment his mother made when she pointed out her newborn baby at the hospital, Tripp was an early and tireless supporter of the then newfangled rock and roll music. At a time when most disc jockeys prided themselves on being sedate and bland, Tripp shocked audiences with his edgy style and upbeat playlist. In 1955, he moved to New York, renamed himself the Curly-Headed Kid in the Third Row, and was soon offered the job of presenting one of the nation's best-known radio shows. Then, in 1959, the 32-year-old Tripp decided to garner some publicity by trying to stay awake for a remarkable 8 days. If successful, he would create a record of his own by racking up the longest ever period of wakefulness. Tripp and his team set up a glass-walled portable radio studio in New York's Times Square and continued to broadcast his daily radio show throughout the ordeal. The publicity stunt was a huge success, with journalists from across the world reporting on Tripp's progress, and thousands of passers-by watching the sleepless disc jockey attempt to keep his eyes wide open. While the nation listened in disbelief to Tripp's broadcasts, a team of military medics kept the disc jockey under constant observation. These doctors took their task seriously, ensuring that they accompanied Tripp 24 hours a day, even when he visited the bathroom. As the hours ticked away, it became harder and harder for Tripp to remain awake, and his behavior became increasingly erratic. At one point, he invited his barber to give him a haircut. Despite knowing the man for several years, Tripp was extremely rude to the barber, eventually making him cry during the haircut, presumably forcing Tripp to rename himself the kid with the badly cut curly hair in the third row. Note: I made up the bit about Tripp renaming himself the kid with the badly cut curly hair in the third row. After a few more days of deprivation, Tripp started to get trippy. He thought that there were mice running around the studio, that his shoes were jammed full of spiders, and that his desk had caught fire. At one point in the proceedings, a local doctor came to examine him. Convinced that the medical man was actually an undertaker who had come to bury him, a half-naked Tripp ran screaming from the room. Towards the end of his ordeal, the exhausted radio host became uncertain about his real identity and thought he was simply impersonating a man called Peter Tripp. Many of these periods seemed to correspond to times at which Tripp would have been dreaming had he been asleep, raising the intriguing possibility that he was actually having a dream, despite being wide awake. After staying awake for just over 8 days, Tripp slept like a baby for 24 hours, and then seemed fine. However, Tripp's wife later said that her husband had become moody and depressed after the stunt. A few years later, he became involved in a high-profile financial scandal, was fired from his job, and in time went through 4 divorces. To many, it appeared as if Tripp had achieved his world record only for the marathon of wakefulness to ruin his life. Others have tried to survive with no sleep. In 1964, a 17-year-old American high school student named Randy Gardner attempted to set a new world record by staying awake for 11 days. After a few days, the going got tough, and 2 of Gardner's friends agreed to help keep him awake by arranging trips to the local donut shop, playing loud music, and staging increasingly long pinball sessions. When Gardner visited the bathroom, his friends talked to him through the door to ensure that the record attempt wasn't going down the pan. Commander John Ross, a doctor from the U.S. Navy Medical Neuropsychiatric Research Unit, monitored Gardner throughout the record attempt and observed a range of psychological problems. Towards the start of the stunt, Gardner experienced many of the issues that had plagued Peter Tripp, including extreme moodiness, memory issues, and paranoia. On his fourth day of wakefulness, he started to hallucinate, confusing a street sign for a person. In a later delusional episode, Gardner, who was white, became convinced that he was a famous black American football player. When friends tried to disabuse him of this notion, he accused them of making racist comments. Gardner was not the only one to suffer. After spending several nights awake, one of the scientists involved in the project became sleep-deprived and was booked for driving his car the wrong way down a one-way street. By the end of the ordeal, Gardner's face appeared expressionless. His speech had become slurred, and he had developed a slight heart murmur. After setting a new world record, he slept for around 15 hours, but, unlike Tripp, did not appear to experience any long-term changes to his personality. Ironically, in a recent interview, Gardner admitted that he now occasionally struggles with insomnia. The curse of continuous consciousness. A rare genetic quirk has meant that over the course of the last few hundred years, a handful of people have discovered the horrors associated with never being able to sleep. In 1836, in a small town just outside of Venice, a middle-aged man named Giacomo mysteriously fell ill. Although he had been fit and healthy throughout his entire life, Giacomo was suddenly unable to sleep, began to suffer from dementia, and eventually died a few months later. Over the course of the next few centuries, many of Giacomo's descendants suffered exactly the same fate. For years, Italian doctors didn't know how to explain these premature deaths, and often attributed them to epilepsy or some kind of strange fever. Then, in the 1980s, researchers realized that these strange fatalities were actually due to an extremely rare genetic disease known as fatal familial insomnia, or FFI. The symptoms of FFI make for grim reading. The disease strikes without warning in middle age and causes the sudden onset of complete insomnia. For months, the sufferer is unable to sleep and starts to experience severe panic attacks and hallucinations. They then rapidly lose weight, exhibit dementia-like loss of their memory, fall into a coma, and die. For much of the time, sufferers are fully conscious and so forced to endure the continuous agony of total sleeplessness. Stanley Prusiner, a neurologist from the University of California at San Francisco, spent much of his career investigating this strange illness. Prusiner eventually discovered that FFI is caused by an infection that makes the body destroy itself. This infection initially attacks the region of the brain responsible for regulating sleep, and so prevents the sufferer from ever losing consciousness. It then moves on to attack several other areas of the brain. Researchers initially thought that Giacomo's descendants were the only people to have FFI, but have since found a handful of other families with the illness. The condition causes a great deal of suffering even before the infection starts, with many of the Giacomo's descendants struggling to find partners and unable to get life insurance. Although there is now a reliable test for the condition, there is no known cure. As a psychologist, I have witnessed similar effects firsthand. A few years ago, I was involved in a television show called Shattered. The program was part entertainment and part science, and involved 10 contestants trying to stay awake for a week. The contestant who managed to avoid sleeping for the longest time stood to walk away with £100,000. To keep everything on a safe footing, the producers enlisted a group of medical experts, and I was asked to help design various "you snooze, you lose" challenges. We came up with lots of fun ways of trying to get the contestants to fall asleep, including having them cuddle a giant teddy bear, listen to a bedtime story, watch paint dry, and sit through an incredibly dull lecture about triangles. The contest was won by a trainee police officer named Claire Southern, who managed to remain awake for just over a week. To stop herself from falling asleep, Claire sang to herself, tensed her feet until they became painful, and prevented herself from urinating. When I met the contestants during the show, the effects of their sleep deprivation were obvious. Almost all reported feeling in a weird vegetative state, and some had started to hallucinate, with one contestant already convinced that he was the Prime Minister of Australia. The suffering endured by those who have attempted to remain continuously awake for several days vividly demonstrate humanity's deep-seated need for sleep. Everyone involved in these long-distance awake-a-thons has suffered a variety of negative experiences, including aggressive mood swings, extreme lethargy, paranoia, blurred vision, slurred speech, and a general sense of confusion. Indeed, Guinness World Records no longer has a category for sleep deprivation because of the potential physical and psychological problems associated with such extreme wakefulness. Sleep deprivation and torture. In the middle of the 16th century, the Church of Scotland made it illegal to be a witch, and during the next 200 years, more than 1,000 people were executed because they allegedly practiced witchcraft. One of the popular means of eliciting confessions was referred to as waking the witch, and involved forcing those accused of witchcraft to stay awake for several days. Tired and prone to hallucinations, these sleep-deprived women usually confessed to being a witch and often reported strange experiences, such as flying or transforming into an animal. It would be nice to think that this primitive and barbaric method of interrogation has become consigned to the history books. Unfortunately, that is not the case. In 2009, Barack Obama made public several top-secret government memos that had been issued under the Bush administration several years earlier. The memos outlined the types of techniques that the CIA could use to interrogate suspected terrorists at secret detention centers around the world. One of the memos explicitly gave the green light to sleep deprivation, allowing interrogators to make prisoners stand against a wall and then shackle their feet to the floor and their hands close to their chins. If the prisoner fell asleep, they would start to fall down and be jolted awake by their chains. Records revealed that a number of detainees experienced this deprivation for several days, and in one instance, it was maintained for more than a week. In addition to the obvious ethical considerations, the procedure may well have caused the detainees to unwittingly produce unreliable information. In the mid-1990s, psychologist Mark Blagrove from Swansea University investigated the relationship between sleep deprivation and suggestibility. In one study, Blagrove had a group of volunteers listen to a short description of a bank robbery. The researchers then randomly split the volunteers into two groups and arranged for them to either sleep normally for a couple of nights or remain awake for 43 hours. All of the volunteers were then interviewed about the crime. The volunteers who had remained awake for just less than 2 days proved especially suggestible, frequently making up details to please the interviewer, evidence that sleep-deprived detainees are more likely to tell the interrogators what they want to hear rather than reveal the truth. an accident waiting to happen. Of course, it could be argued that forcing yourself, or being forced to spend several days and nights wide awake, is a highly artificial situation, and that losing just an hour or so of sleep each night would not be especially detrimental. More than 50 years of scientific research into sleep has examined this issue, and the results are as surprising as they are terrifying. On the 24th of March 1989, one of the world's largest oil tankers left Alaska with a full cargo, bound for Long Beach, California. A short time into the journey, the third mate attempted to alter the vessel's course to avoid several large ice floes. Unfortunately, the tanker failed to respond to the changes because the autopilot had been left on. Despite two warnings from lookouts, the third mate realized his error far too late and was unable to prevent the ship hitting an underwater reef and spilling hundreds of thousands of barrels of crude oil into the sea. The Exxon Valdez disaster destroyed the surrounding wildlife and habitat, and is widely considered to be one of the worst environmental catastrophes in modern history. Accident investigators concluded that sleep deprivation had played a major role in the incident. The third mate had only slept 6 hours in the previous 2 days, and was simply too tired to notice that the ship was not changing course, or to respond to the warnings from the lookouts. Unfortunately, this is not a unique event. Similar investigations have revealed that sleep deprivation played a key role in several other catastrophes, including Three Mile Island, the Challenger space shuttle disaster, and the Chernobyl meltdown. You don't have to be in charge of a tanker, a nuclear plant, or a space program to fall foul of the effects of sleep deprivation. In fact, even a small amount of sleep deprivation can dramatically increase the chances of you having a serious accident in everyday life. Gregory Belenke has dedicated much of his career to understanding the psychological dangers of being half asleep. For almost 30 years, Belenke worked for the U.S. Army Medical Corps and led the military's fight against fatigue. Belenke assessed many different ways of keeping soldiers awake on the battlefield, including a movement-sensitive wristwatch that can detect sleep patterns, and special caffeine-impregnated chewing gum that can deliver the punch of a double espresso within seconds. Belenke eventually decided to swap his camouflage jacket for a lab coat, and now has the altogether more sedate task of heading up the Sleep and Performance Research Center at Washington State University. In 2003, Belenke and his colleagues staged one of the world's most comprehensive studies into sleep loss and vigilance. The researchers asked volunteers to spend 2 weeks in a sleep laboratory. For the first few days, the team ensured that all of the participants were tucked up in bed by 11 p.m. and allowed to sleep until 7 a.m. The researchers then randomly allocated the volunteers to one of four groups and ensured that each group obtained a different amount of sleep each night. The volunteers in one of the groups were lucky enough to spend a luxurious 9 hours in bed, while those in the other three groups were allowed to sleep either 7, 5, or 3 hours per night. For the next few days, the researchers asked the volunteers to rate how tired they felt, and tested their alertness by asking them to press a button the moment they saw dots appear on a computer screen. The volunteers who obtained 9 hours sleep each night remained highly alert, while those spending just 3 or 5 hours in bed quickly became tired and inattentive. However, the results from those getting 7 hours sleep per night proved especially surprising. Although these volunteers constantly assured the researchers that they were as wide awake as those spending 9 hours in bed, the data from the push the button when you see the dot test revealed a very different story. After just a couple of days of getting 7 hours sleep, they became significantly less vigilant and remained sluggish for the remainder of the experiment. Belenke's study revealed the highly pernicious nature of even a small amount of sleep deprivation. spend just a few nights sleeping for 7 hours or less, and your brain goes into slow motion. To make matters worse, you will continue to feel fine, and so don't make allowances for your sluggish mind. Within just a couple of days, this level of sleep deprivation transforms you into an accident waiting to happen. The situation becomes potentially deadly whenever you climb into your car, with sleep deprivation slowing reaction time and causing a strange form of blackout known as a microsleep. The scale of the problem is terrifying. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration believes that such fatigue causes more than 100,000 road accidents and 1,500 fatalities each year. The issue is especially acute in teenage drivers, with drowsiness being the number one cause of fatal car crashes for 18 to 25-year-olds. It seems that no teenage driver is immune from the problem, with a boy who'd won the accolade America's Safest Teen Driver dying after falling asleep at the wheel and drifting into oncoming traffic. Worryingly, the high number of fatigue-related accidents is just the tip of the sleep deprivation iceberg. The mystery of microsleep. When you are sleep-deprived, your brain can nod off for a few seconds without you being aware of it. Amazingly, your eyes can remain open even though your brain is sound asleep. It's as if the lights are on, but no one is home. This mysterious phenomenon is known as microsleep and can happen at any time during your waking day. If you happen to be reading at the time, you may suddenly realize that you have no idea what the last sentence was about. If you're chatting, then you will feel as if you have lost part of a conversation for a few moments. If you happen to be driving at the time, you may be a few moments away from death. In 2012, reporter Ron Claiborne from ABC News teamed up with medical researcher Charles Seisler to investigate the impact of microsleeps on driving. Claiborne stayed awake for 32 hours to mimic the effects of chronic sleep deprivation. The researchers then connected Claiborne to a device that measured his brain activity, put him at the wheel of a minivan, and asked him to drive around a closed test track for a couple of hours. Claiborne appeared to be awake, and his eyes remained open for almost the entire trip. However, his brain activity revealed that he took more than 20 microsleeps during the drive. Although microsleeps only last a few seconds, they can easily cause drivers to shoot across red lights or drift into oncoming traffic. Investigators are able to spot road accidents caused by microsleep because there is usually little evidence of the driver attempting to respond to an obvious hazard. Fatigued drivers don't hit the brakes or try to swerve. Instead, they simply drive directly into danger while sound asleep. Sleeping on the job. Your brain makes up just 2% of your weight, but uses 20% of all the energy your body produces. When you are sleep-deprived, your body struggles to extract glucose from the bloodstream, and so your brain cannot think straight. To investigate this effect, sleep scientist Jim Horn from Loughborough University once created his own mini-casino and ensured that the only game in town was extremely simple. Volunteers were invited to Horn's laboratory cum casino and asked to pick cards from four decks. Some of the cards earned them money, and others lost them money. The decks were stacked so that they contained different proportions of winning and losing cards. The volunteers who had got a good night's sleep unconsciously learnt to choose cards from the decks with a high proportion of winning cards, whereas those who were sleep-deprived continued to select randomly from all four decks. Given Horn's findings, it isn't surprising that many casinos encourage people to spend the night gambling rather than